Hello and welcome to another episode of the Canadian Skiing Podcast. My name is Jesse Cockney, joined as always by producer extraordinaire Nathaniel Ma. And today we've got a very special guest joining us to talk about the Tour de Ski. Daria Beatty is joining us from Whitehorse and here to give the insights to Nathaniel and I and the listener of what it's like to race the Tour, the ins and outs of traveling to in between each venue, and what our Canadians should be looking forward to with the Canadian team racing this Tour. So a lot to get into. Let's jump right in. Daria, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Jess. Happy to be here. I'm excited to talk about the Tour de Ski, which I had a opportunity to race from start to finish last year, and excited to be preparing it to watch it from the couch this year. It's definitely a grueling week of racing, and I'm really looking forward to watching our four Canadians race. It's Catherine Stewart-Jones, Antoine Sierre, Olivier Léveillé, and Julian Locke, and three of them have raced it previously. They all have some experience racing in the venues where the Tour is this year. It's starting in Toblach, Italy, heading to Davos, Switzerland, which is pretty much the Canadian home base in Europe, and then finishing off, as always, in Val d'Ifiemme. So it should be a really exciting edition of the Tour.
Yeah, like you said, finishing off, as always, with Val d'Ifiemme and climbing up the Alpe de Sermis. So you said that you finished it last year. What was it like climbing up Alpe de Sermis? There's, you know, a lot of times when you watch these things on TV, it doesn't do it justice for how steep it is, how hard it is. But, you know, I never competed in the Tour, but watching it and seeing the people that I competed against week in, week out, basically walking up this hill, I have to imagine, yeah, like that, it looks hard to me. Like that's one thing that actually does come through in TV and look like, ah, that looks pretty horrendous. I don't really want to do that. What was it like climbing up that thing last year?
Yes, it was. I never truly believed how exhausting it actually is. Having seen our teammates race it many times before that, but then actually experiencing it, it is probably the hardest individual day on skis I've ever had to do. And to top it all off, you are at the tail end of multiple days of consecutive racing. So you're not even going in there climbing this alpine ski hill for 3 kilometers uphill fresh. You're not even fresh. You're already exhausted. You've been pushing yourself for a full week of racing. And then you get to end with 7 kilometers in the valley leading up, and then a final 3K up Alpe de Sermis. And yeah, it is absolutely grueling. There's a reason you see athletes doing the coaches walk, coaches skate up there, trying to just make it to the finish line, collapsing over the finish line, barely even the even the finish line is uphill.
Yeah,
that's my favorite at the end. Part. Yeah. It's like seeing someone collapse and then the volunteers coming in, basically dragging the person like away from the line so they're not blocking the finish. I think that puts into context how hard that thing is, that people can't even crawl themselves out of the way.
Yes. It's something where when you finish it, you feel extremely proud, no matter how slowly or quickly you went up it. You're like, I did that. I completed it. As a ski racer, you guys both can probably relate. We're very competitive people. Usually completing a race is not something that gives you great satisfaction and joy. You're in there to compete and do the best you can. But with that specific stage, completing it kind of does give you that outside of the result even. And that, I think, kind of speaks to what sort of stage it is and how hard it is, that you can kind of be satisfied with it regardless of result, just knowing you were able to do it.
It looks like the hardest part of the entire World Cup season, right in the middle, kind of like the hump day of the World Cup calendar. I think if we, you know, right at the start, we've got our Canadians, we've got Catherine Stewart-Jones, our veteran on the team, Antoine Sierre, really great chance in all of the classic races. Olivier Léveillé, I think, was starting to find his form, especially in the distance skate events. And the newcomer to the Tour, Julian Locke, winning his his spot to the tour with the COC races in Anchorage, Alaska. And we also had Sonja Schmidt qualify for the tour, but she declined it. Probably has her eye set on either U23s or the World Cups in Canmore. But yeah, we've got a good mix of experience. And I mean, I can't say Julian is inexperienced. He's raced a lot of World Cups. This is just a lot of World Cups in back-to-back-to-back fashion. So it's going to be a good mix for them. I think Julian has a great opportunity in the skate sprints. We've only got skate sprints in this edition of the tour, with the first two venues in Toblach and Davos. And he's got experience in Davos. He's raced that before. So I think that could be a good opportunity for him. But what's one of the days, Daria, that you've got circled on your calendar that you're hoping for a good Canadian day?
Yeah, I think the classic distance race in Val d'Ifiemme. I believe it's the second last stage of the tour. Both Catherine and Tony have had good races there in the past. They both really like that venue. And so I'm definitely got that one circled. I feel like once you've raced really well at a venue in the past, you just bring a new level of confidence with you when you go back to that venue. There's that self-belief within you. You know how to do it. And so it's just easier to find it again in the future. So yeah, I think that's definitely one circled for me. And I think also the skate sprint in Davos could be a fun opportunity for the entire team to mix it up, because it is halfway into the tour. There is a 20 kilometer distance race the race before, which really changes how people feel energy wise, recovery wise. It sometimes excludes the sprint favorites a little bit more that you would expect on a normal race weekend who haven't raced the distance races. So having that mix of three, having raced three stages, coming to Davos. Davos is always fun too, because it's at higher altitude than a lot of the other venues. So that plays in as well. I think it could be a really fun day for the Canadians, but also just to see upsets or new faces at the top of the race across the board, not just on the Canadian side.
I guess that's the thing to note with the tour, is that in order to keep racing, is you have to start every day. So like you said, your pure sprinters who would usually sit out on the distance day, they will have to start on the distance days in the Tour de Ski to keep going and to keep looking at the sprints. So how does that change the overall look of the results?
Yeah. So for example, the second sprint follows a 20 kilometer pursuit race that is in Toblach. There's one rest day in between that. That means that all those people who are staying in the tour to focus on that second sprint have to race that 20 kilometer, and they have to be within a certain time back from the leaders. So you can't just go out there and ski around the course for 20 kilometers like a training day. You're out there racing and making sure that you make that time cutoff to have a chance to fight another day. And that definitely changes how the tour works versus any other weekend you'll see on World Cup. It brings in that true stage mentality that you often see in bike racing, which is really fun to see come in skiing this one event a year.
Yeah, it is such an interesting thing, because we pretty much only have our attention focused on the race winners, podium placements, and we're top 10. But this is really a fun competition, because you have to keep your eye on the back of the race, because there's the ominous cut line that's always behind the athletes near the end of the race. And it gets thinner and thinner at the field every day, with people missing the time cut, people getting ill, people giving up just from fatigue. It's another fun thing to keep an eye on is who's starting the next day, who's succumbed or been cut by that line, always chasing them from behind. It's a really unique race in that sense. And yeah, really fun for us to follow. I think it's also got to be one of the highlights for athletes racing in their career. It's always like the biggest event that FIS puts on for the year is this Tour de Ski So competing in it is such a fun thing. And I am just like so excited as a fan, because it means for like a week and a half, we get to wake up pretty much every day to race results and cheer on the Canadians and see how the day is going for them. So that's great.
I got to say, if you like road bike racing, this is the one to check out for sure. Cause it's such a similar, like as a spectator and fan, it's such a similar mindset. Like, yeah, there's the day going on, which is exciting, but there's always those races, those big picture races. So you watch the GC contenders, they approach certain days differently, and same with the sprinters, right? Like some days they're going to try and just finish and the other days they're going to try and pin it. So it's, yeah, there's so much crossover to like a grand tour in road racing. I think it's really cool. And if you've never watched skiing before, like this is the one to check out for sure.
Yeah. And like you're saying about there's the overall winner of the Tour de Ski. There's also a sprint winner, which has to do with the two individual skate sprints that will happen this year, but also with bonus sprints within the mass start distance races. So you will see certain athletes who have done really well on the skate sprint races really trying to stay in there, especially for the first half of a distance race, to get those bonus sprint points. There's even a sprint right before the hill climb starts on the final day of the tour. So you will see athletes going to the front, trying to get those sprint points, fighting for that sprint overall win in the tour prior to the hill climb. And then some of them that will then kind of go for those points and then survive to the top. So it's really fun to see different athlete strategies. Sometimes the overall leader is also the sprint leader. Sometimes they're completely different. And so there's a fun mix of what each athlete is focusing on individually for them, for kind of achieving their goals in the tour, and which really keeps it exciting.
Yeah. One of the things that it's hard to tell from TV because it's not part of the racing, but logistically it's such an undertaking for the teams to take athletes across the Alps from venue to venue to venue. There's this race behind the scenes of the logistics of it all, and you're only going to really understand it if you've done it. So Daria, what was it like? You finish a race, you usually just go back to the hotel and relax for the night. But in the Tour de Ski, like you're often, maybe going right from the racing venue to the next one to start racing in the next couple of days. Like what's the travel like between each venue?
Yeah, the travel is really what makes the Tour de Ski that next level hard for athletes as well, because it's always three venues there. It always ends in Val de Fiemme, as we've mentioned. The first two venues are often different depending year to year, but they are always significant travel between them, and you will finish your race and then go, sometimes if you're lucky, go back to the hotel for some food, quick change, and then hit the road. Sometimes you'll go straight from the venue onto the road, so trying to figure out ways to recover, sleep, get properly nourished again, and reset for the next stage. It really is a cool thing. And most of the teams are they're traveling in just their team vans to the next venue, then setting up with their therapists, trying to recover as best as possible. Yeah, it definitely adds a whole another aspect than if the races were all in the same venue and you could kind of sleep and nap and relax in between each race.
Yeah, no, one of the things back in the day when Devin, Alex, Lenny and Babs were racing the tour, there was a bus that the Canadians were traveling between venues in. And that was one of the, I'd say, like secret weapons they had in their arsenal to do so well on the tour. And I think that really helped their recovery, made sure that, you go out, put the hard effort in, and you can replicate that effort the next time you get out to race. And I remember actually a while ago, Alex had some back trouble. Like he was really struggling with some back injuries. And I think he had a really great treatment, like a good massage, good osteo, got him back and ready to race the next day in Val di Fiemme. I think he had a podium in that race. Like you can kind of credit the logistics and the travel from Team Canada setting that up instead of having to sit in the back of a cramped little Peugeot or something traveling over the mountain passes. He was able to relax on the bus and get a massage and be ready for the next day. So it can be a huge, decisive factor in a event like this, just being more comfortable and being more rested, because it's a bit of a war of attrition.
I heard a crazy story about that year that, and actually what you're talking about was Alex like tweaked his back in a race, and they called up a physio in Calgary that Alex had been working with, and he hopped on a plane within like a matter of hours and flew to Venice, got picked up at the airport by head coach at the time, Justin Wadsworth, ripped over the mountain pass and got in like late evening, got Alex the treatment. And then that guy basically, like the physio basically just got on the bus or in a car the next morning and flew out. And then Alex got a podium. He didn't even get to watch the race. But I actually talked to the physio who got to do that. And I was like, that is the coolest thing ever. Like the most like baller rock star move to like fly in your physio for less than 24 hours and then get a podium out of it.
I mean, when it works out like that, that's great. That's amazing. Yeah. So Daria, who do you have battling through the multiple stages, multiple venues to climb up Alps Nermes and coming out on top? Like, who do you think would be the favorites on the men's and the women's side?
Yeah, so let's start with the women's side. I mean, the American women have been so strong at the start of the season this year. I think that Jessie and Rosie are both overall contenders for the tour. Jessie, having won the Tour de Ski in the past, she knows what it takes, and she's had, I think, her strongest start to the season ever at this point. And I think also someone not to count out really on the outside for a shot at that Tour de Ski podium is Sophia Laukley. I mean, she got her first ever World Cup podium on the Alpe d'Huez climb last year. And I think that, you know, depending on how well she can climb at the end of the day, if she can be in contention in the rest of the tour, she has a chance of sneaking on there. So I think overall, the Americans women's team has a really strong shot of getting someone up there. Whoever it may be, they've had a super strong start to the season. I think also you can't count out the Swedish women, Jona Sundling, Moa Ilar. Both of them are really strong in sprint and distance, and I don't know how either of them will do on the final climb. That's probably their a little bit of a weaker spot for them compared to the American women, but I think they will be really, really strong contenders overall in the tour. And then if they can hold on there in that final climb, and as always, Frida Karlsson is a great all-around skier. There's lots of classic in this year's Tour de Ski, where she really excels. So I think those would be my top picks for the women's side. And I think there will be a little bit of competition in there from the Norwegians, as always, and the German women who have been super strong. But on the men's side, I really would love to see Harald Amundsen continue the strong start to the year he's been having. He's been super consistent across all disciplines. So I think he'll be in there fighting. And as always, you can't count out Johannes Klebo. He is probably the favorite for the tour. He just has been getting healthier as the season comes on, having had COVID prior to the season. He had a bit of a slow start, but he really showed his dominance in Trondheim at home. And I think that will continue. My sleeper pick is Andrew Musgrave. He can't really sprint race, but he is a super strong distance skier. And if he can manage to get a few points out of the sprint races, I think he will be in contention on the final climb, and he's a great climber. So it'd be fun to see him fighting for the top as well. Who are your picks, Jess?
Yeah, totally agree. I think, you know, I'm a sucker for just going chalk, picking the favorites. I like Johannes Klebo. I think he's just going to be the class of the field. He's really, I'd say, you know, on top of being likely one of the fittest athletes in the field, he's definitely the smartest when it comes to energy conservation, when to push, when to relax. So he can, you know, get through one of the mass start or pursuit start classic days, winning it, but also, you know, doing his best to basically conserve energy wherever he can and not overtax himself, because he is such an incredible downhill skier. Tactically, he's very smart. So it's funny. He's really smart and he's really fast. He's got a lot going for him in an event like the Tour. I think he'll show his class and, you know, come out on top. I think his hardest test is going to be that mass start climb at the end of the Tour. I think he'll struggle to keep up with probably someone like Kruger or, you know, on a great day, Andrew Musgrave, like you mentioned. But I think by that time he'll have made enough distance on the distance skiers to keep his overall win. And yeah, just look at the mix of classic versus skate in this Tour. And like you said, there is a lot of classic. And I think between Jessie and Rosie, I'd kind of tip the scales over to Rosie for that. She's got a little more consistency to her classic skiing, especially this year. She's got podiums for the first time in classic. And I think it'll be tough for Jessie to overcome the multitude of classic days if Rosie can stay ahead of her, because Rosie's not going to give up anything in the skate days and the sprints and the distance. And they're going to be relatively evenly matched on the climb. So I think if I was going to put a buck on either of them, I'd probably put it on Rosie. Yeah, Nathaniel, who do you have at the top there?
I think because the obvious picks aren't that fun, because they're obvious, I'm gonna choose some random dark horses here.
There you go. Yeah.
For the women, I'm going Sophia Lockley. I guess Dari, you already mentioned her, but I think, you know, why not? Just get through the sprints. She's shown that she can climb. Like, there's some tough courses. Who knows? Maybe it's her year, I guess. And then on the men, I want to say Mika Vermeulen from Austria. He's been racing really well. Former Nordic combined athlete, so I do have some bias, as I got to race with him a few times. But yeah, no, I think that would be really cool to see him high up in the overall Tour de Ski rankings. But yeah, you know, really those are some bold picks.
Yeah, shoot your shot, man.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been having a great season for sure.
Yeah, he was always meant to be a cross-country skier. I would remember racing on the B Tour circuit with him and jumping minutes in front of him. And then just like midway through the race, seeing this like little Austrian rip by. And I was like, well, goes Mika.
Well, he found his calling now. He's on the cross-country circuit and doing great for Austria.
Yeah, I think he's where he's meant to be now.
That's cool. I didn't know he had the Nordic combined background. I just saw his name start to pop up on the results list, because he is having an incredible start to the year. He's very consistent. Him and Michael Novak, I think that's another name that he's been having a great, you know, he was doing awesome at the Tour previously. It suits his style. He's a good all-rounder. He had a great World Championships last year and very consistent this year. So it's there are a good number of names waiting in the wings. If some of these top athletes show a little bit of weakness, a little bit of vulnerability, that there's, you know, a lot of athletes waiting to pounce on that. And the Tour is going to expose some of those vulnerabilities, because it is so taxing, the racing and the travel. Yeah, it'll be fun. I hope we're in for another exciting edition of the Tour de Ski. And I think that's it. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, we can wrap it up. I'll put a few things on the note. I think trials in Mont Saint-Anne coming up next, so we'll probably are we doing a preview show on that?
I think we should do, definitely.
Okay, so keep an eye out for that. That'll be coming out. And then after that, it's World Juniors, and then we're full on. So we're in it.
Yeah, and those Canmore World Cups always closer and closer to us.
Yeah, Daria, are you planning, will you be in Canmore for those races?
I'm not sure yet, to be determined, but I'll keep you posted.
Well, hopefully we'll see you there.
Yeah, hopefully.
But thanks so much for joining us today, sharing the insights from the Tour de Ski, and all the best, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, both of you, and I'm super excited to watch the Tour, watch all my friends racing over there, and I think it's going to be a great edition of the Tour de Ski with these venues this year.
All right. Well, yeah, we have a few thank yous. Thank you, Daria, for joining us. Thanks, Nathaniel, for producing as always. And thanks, listener, for joining us. And looking forward to seeing some great racing. But until then, we will say bye and see you on the trails.